Hello, everyone. Tonight I am going to be presenting, talking about some bizarre happenings that we see in player behavior and performance immediately after a swinging strike. To go ahead and get us started, I want to take to put us, I guess, in the right frame of mind. Let's go ahead and say that congratulations, you are now Max Scherzer. Way to go. You're standing on the mound trying to decide what you want to throw in the first pitch of an at-bat, and you decide that you are going to throw in a changeup. You throw it, goes in the zone for a called strike, way to go, now you're at an 0-1 count. Let's say that in another world, you decide to throw that same changeup, but instead of getting the called strike, you make the batter take a wild swing and miss. We see Michael Conforto here, poor guy with his knee on the ground. You've made him look like a complete fool. Now you're still at an 0-1 count. In both these scenarios, you've just thrown a changeup for a strike. Now you're looking at an 0-1 count, but now you have to decide what you want to throw on the second pitch. The big question that I'm hoping to get at, or the first big question I'm hoping to get at in this research presentation is, after getting the big swing and miss, are you now more likely to go back to the changeup again than you would be had you just gotten the called strike or a foul ball or a ball? Second part of the presentation is going to be, let's say that you do end up deciding to go back to the changeup. That's going to be basically a post-whiff repeat pitch that comes right after a swing and miss, and you're throwing the changeup again. Is the batter going to be more likely to swing and miss against this changeup since he's just swung and missed at it than, say, if he just fouled it off, taking it for a strike or taking it for a ball? What we're getting at, like Scott said in the intro of the presentations, we're getting at some questions of pitch sequencing, which has been explored a decent amount in sabermetrics, but I feel like it could be explored a little bit further. A lot of the focus on pitch sequencing has been on pitch tunneling, especially in the last few years. There have been some really, really interesting articles written on that. I have a couple of the seminal pieces here. Basically, what pitch tunneling is we have, let's say I throw a fastball and a changeup. They both look the same coming out of my hand, take the same path, and then diverge as they get close to the plate. That's going to increase the effectiveness of the pitch. And what a lot of research on tunneling has found is that while it can really increase the effectiveness of the pitch, it is certainly not the only aspect of pitch sequencing that matters. So I know, kind of funny that I came across when I was doing some research for this about what people have looked into in this topic. So I couldn't find any articles exactly about what I was looking at, but in a 2014 article from Rob Arthur on Baseball Prospectus on pitch sequencing, the article itself was about a little bit of a different subject. But in the comments section, he actually had Rob had an interaction with a commenter that basically described exactly what we're going to be looking at in this project here, looking at whether the pitcher's decision of what to throw on the next pitch differs based on whether he just got a swing strike or a call strike. So I guess if the commenter Saber TJ is watching this presentation 7 years later, perhaps we'll get an answer to that question tonight. Hope we can go ahead and get rolling with the methods on our first question. Stated more generally, are pitchers more likely to repeat their previous pitch after getting a whiff? To answer this question, we're going to go ahead and use data from the 2019 MLB season, all pulled from Baseball Savant. Gives us a huge spreadsheet of over 700,000 pitches, has all kinds of information about each pitch. What we're really going to be focused on here is the pitch types. What pitch was it? So fastball, changeup, and the result of the pitch. It resulted in a called strike, ball, swing and strike. What happened? We're going to have to remove a bunch of pitches from the data for the analysis. Most importantly, we're going to take out the first pitch of each at-bat. Just because the whole point of this project is that we're conditioning based on what happened on the last pitch. And for the first pitch of an at-bat, there is not a previous pitch to look at. We are also going to take out some of these more rare pitches that are thrown by only a couple of pitchers or follow weird sequencing patterns. We're also going to take out any pitches that were thrown by a pitcher who had under 200 pitches thrown on the year, mostly to remove any position players pitching from the data. That leaves us with well over 500,000 pitches to analyze, which is a lovely large sample for us. To actually answer our question, we're basically going to take two steps. First, with those 500,000 pitches, We're going to take a look at all of them, and we're going to ask what happened on the last pitch and group them accordingly. So if the last pitch was the last pitch, result in a ball, called strike, foul ball, swing and strike, and group them as such. Then within each of those groups, we're going to look and ask ourselves, what proportion of these pitches are repeat pitches of the last pitch? So for example, in our called strike group, we had a little bit over 100,000 pitches where the last pitch was a called strike. Going to take a look at all those and say, is this pitch type the same as the last pitch? And that leaves us with a little bit over 40,000 pitches. We divide our numbers by each other, and we end up finding that our repeat pitch proportion after called strikes is 37.8%. We can repeat this with all of the pitch previous pitch result groups, which gives us our lovely initial bar graph right here. What this is telling us, if we look at the purple bar on the right, is that when after a swing and strike, a pitcher is more likely to go back to the last pitch than he is after a ball, called strike, or foul ball. We see about a 10 to 15 percentage point difference, which I know does not sound like the largest difference in the history of Earth, but is a fairly substantial and real difference. However, our work is not even close to done because there are several confounding variables that could be making this relationship appear to be happening. What I mean by that is that we might think our relationship looks like this, where it's so neat and perfect. Wow, previous pitch result leads directly to repeat pitch frequency. How lovely. But in reality, our relationship is probably a complete mess like this, where we have all these other variables that are going to be interacting with each other and could be muddying that relationship. What we want to do is pick out some of these other variables that we think might be affecting the relationship, keep those constant in order to isolate the relationship between previous pitch result and repeat pitch frequency. I went ahead and picked out three controls that could be affecting this relationship. Going to be looking at the count on the pitch, what the previous pitch type was, because perhaps this is a relationship we only see, say, on off-speed pitches and not fastballs. And also going to be looking at the individual pitcher who threw the pitch, what is their overall swing and strike rate on the season. That's because perhaps pitchers who generate tons of whiffs show this effect, and maybe pitchers who don't generate, pitchers who are more contact pitchers are not really showing the effect. In order to do that, I've divided pitchers into five swing and strike rate groups. So the bottom 20% of pitchers are in one group, then the next like 20th to 40th percentile in the next group, et cetera, et cetera. Then what we're going to do is going to be pretty simple again. We're going to group pitches based on these control variable combinations and repeat our analysis of calculating our repeat pitch proportions. And it might be a little bit confusing. So to give an example of what one of these control variable combinations is, right here, we can take a look at, this is any pitch that was thrown on a 1-2 count. The last pitch was a four-seam fastball and was thrown by a pitcher in our lowest swing and strike percentage group. And we end up finding that, yes, for this group, our relationship still holds. We're going to repeat our last pitch more often after we get a whiff. However, now we need to ask ourselves if it holds for all our other control group combinations. And we could take a look at 126 bar graphs, but that would be the worst thing in the history of Earth. So instead, what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at a scatter plot to show the differences. And this plot is going to be a little bit confusing at first glance. So let me go ahead and walk us through it. Let's start with the plot on the left. Each of those dots is going to be one of those 126 control group combinations. So for example, the red dot that just appeared on our screen is going to be the combination that we looked at on the last slide, the 1-2 pitches after a four-seam fastball and thrown by the low whiff rate pitchers. On the x-axis is going to be our repeat pitch frequency after foul balls. So for that group, it was 30%. And on the y-axis is going to be the repeat pitch frequency after whiffs, which for that group is going to be 55%. So in this plot, the further up in the top left you are, the greater our so-called whiff effect is, or the difference in the repeat pitch frequencies. That solid diagonal line that we have going up the middle, the solid line is going to be the line y equals x. What that is just there as a point of reference. So if a point falls exactly on that line, that means that there's no difference in the repeat pitch frequency after swing and strikes and after foul balls. then the dashed lines are each going to represent a 10 percentage point difference. So if you're on the first dashed line, there's a 10 percentage point difference. If you're on the next dashed line, there's a 20 percentage point difference. What this plot is telling us is quite, the results are quite striking here. We see that 124 of our 126 control group combinations show the effect to some extent, or were above that solid dashed line. And so pretty much every single one. And it's not like this is some small marginal percentage point difference. For 110 of the combinations, it's at least a 10 percentage point difference. For 49 of the combinations, it's at least a 20 percentage point difference. The effect is very, it's quite large. And it, so we have our incorporating all of our control variables, it's quite real. The plot on the right is exactly the same, except it, on the x-axis, we have the repeat pitch frequency after called strikes instead of foul balls, just showing that the effect is real for both, whether we compare to foul balls or called strikes, the effect is real. Now that we've established that there is a real relationship here, we might be wondering, well, what are we gonna do with it? How is it gonna be useful? One example of, I think it's gonna be probably the most at least immediate use is going to be looking at the whiff effect of individual pitchers. What I have here is the most, the pitchers who in the 2019 season had the greatest difference in their repeat pitch frequencies. The names, don't worry, names are not going to be that important, but what I really want to highlight here is the magnitude of the differences. For the most extreme pitchers, it is absolutely massive and will be very useful for batters to know. For example, let's say that you're standing in the box against Amir Garrett. He throws a fastball against you and you foul it off. Oh, and I have about a 50-50 shot of seeing another fastball. Perhaps not that useful. He throws me a fastball and I swing and miss at it. Now I'm thinking I have about an 80% chance of seeing a fastball again. That is going to drastically change what pitch that I'm guessing I'm going to see on the next pitch. A couple of caveats I should give is that for our individual pitchers here, we're not accounting for all the controls of the last couple of slides. So that could have something to do with how extreme this is. And also that for every pitcher, the relationship is not as extreme as we're seeing here. However, for the pitchers where it is this extreme, this can be very useful in something like a scouting report. Speaking of usefulness to batters, that's gonna lead us kind of into our second research question, which is where we're gonna be looking at whether batters are more likely to swing and miss against these post-whiff repeat pitches. And to get ourselves in the right frame of mind, again, just a quick little example. Let's say that you're standing in and you've just whiffed at a slider, pitcher throws you another slider. Are you more likely to swing and miss at the second slider than you would be if you'd fouled off the first slider, taking it for a strike or something along those lines? In order to answer this question, we need to know two attributes of each pitch. We need to know, did it just come after a whiff, and is it a repeat pitch? This is going to leave us, so we can have yes or no for either of those questions. We're going to have four groups that each pitch can fall into. It's going to be very easy to calculate the swing and strike percentage of each group. That is what we show here, and the difference in our initial findings, without any controls, is pretty wild. To give a little bit of context for this difference, the league average swing and strike percentage in 2019 was 11.2%. The second highest swing and strike average in all of baseball was Nick Anderson's 19.5%. Now remember that in this analysis, we are taking out the first pitch of all at bats, which is going to inflate all of our numbers. But still, on these post-whiff repeat pitches, we go from league average when it doesn't meet that criteria to suddenly just wild, wild swing and strike rates when it is a post-whiff repeat pitch. However, even more so than our first question, controls are going to be really, really important to account for. The first, more simpler to control to apply, is going to be pitch type. Perhaps we only see the effect for certain pitch types, but as we show right here, even when we break this down by pitch, we are still seeing, if we look in the top right of each of these little tables, that the swing and strike percentage is going to be highest for those post-whiff repeat pitches. Now, however, we need to apply our most important control. because we have a massive selection bias problem going on here. Let me explain what I mean by that. Let's say that you have a 25% whiff rate on your curveball and I have a 5% whiff rate on my curveball. We both throw 1,000 curveballs. You are going to get way more whiffs on your curveball. So you are going to have a lot more opportunity to throw these post whiff repeat pitches. Then since you have a better curveball, you're going to get more whiffs on these. And what ends up happening is that when we put our numbers, when we put together my swing and strike rate numbers and your swing and strike rate numbers, you are going to be wildly overrepresented in our post whiff repeat pitch group. So it's going to look like those types of pitches have a higher swing and strike rate, even though there's no real relationship there. The way that we're going to control for this is we're going to build a nice little logistic regression model where we're going to use a pitcher, our pitcher and batter's swing and strike rate overall as a control variable. And we're not really going to get too far into the math weeds of logistic regression, but to give basic bird's eye view of it, what do we mean when we say that we're going to make a logistic regression model? Well, what we're going to be able to do now is let's take a look at our four-seam fastball model. What we're going to do is we want to predict the probability of a whiff on a four-seam fastball given the information that I have on a lift. Those are going to be our predictive variables. Is it a repeat pitch? Did it just come after a whiff? And then what is the batter and pitcher's swing and strike rate on fastballs overall for the entire season? Then we have some fun math magic. Math magic happens. It's not too bad, but again, we don't really need to go into the math of all of it. And then that is going to spit out a predicted probability of a whiff of that pitch. What's really nice about this is now I have this lovely equation and I can keep those orange predictors on the left, the ones that we're not really interested in. I can just keep those at some constant and then I can change the value for my repeat pitch and my post whiff. And I can see if the probability of a whiff is going to change. So let's go ahead and take a look at what our model tells us about four-seam fastballs. What we have here is a plot that on the y-axis is going to show the predicted swing and strike rate on a fastball given the repeat pitch, whether or not it's a repeat pitch, and whether or not the last pitch was a whiff. And this is going to be keeping our batter and pitcher swing and strike rates on fastballs constant. What this is telling us is if we look at that, that confidence band up there on the top right, is that we're, for our post-whiff repeat pitches, we're predicting that we're gonna swing and miss at those somewhere between 11 and 12% of the time. While for our non-post-whiff repeat pitches, the other three bands on the left, we're gonna swing and miss somewhere between 8 and 9% of the time. What does this mean? Well, it means that when we control for that selection bias that we just talked about, we still see that there's a real relationship where we are whiffing more often against the post-whiff repeat pitches. It's a smaller difference than it appeared before. It's about 2 or 3%. But especially when we're talking about four-seam fastballs, that is still a sizable and meaningful difference. Now, this is just the logistic regression model for four-seam fastballs. We need to go through the same process and see if that holds for other pitch types. And what I ended up finding here, as I went through this project, honestly, like throughout the entire project, I kept on being surprised at different results that I was finding. This right here was probably the biggest surprise to me of anything that I did, because what we see here is that other pitches do not follow the same trend as we saw in the four-seam fastballs. That rightmost orange band for our post-whiff repeat pitches is overlapping with the other bands, meaning that there is not a meaningful difference in the predicted whiff rate when we control for our pitcher and batter swing and strike rates. And I think like the fact that there's not a relationship, that's not the surprising part to me. That's kind of what I expected, to be honest, going into it. What really surprised me though is the fact that we see something different, like that the four-seam fastballs are so unique compared to anything. And I was racking my brain trying to think of an explanation for that, and I really don't have a good one. Perhaps there's something that I should have controlled for with the four-seam fastballs that was missed. I mean, normally my first reaction is to assume that I missed something, so perhaps that's it. or I don't know, perhaps like when a batter gets out of bed and heads to the ballpark in the morning, maybe there are some days where like normally he's going to swing and miss a fastball 10% of the time, but he's feeling off that day. He's late on everything. Maybe just off days where you're going to be whiffing at a fastball and you're going to be late 20% of the time. I don't know what the answer is, but I think it's such an interesting phenomenon. You know, I'm just excited to find that. Oh, we have gone through quite a bit of information in the last 21 minutes. So to go ahead, and I want to go ahead and summarize the major findings. So to start off, we were asking ourselves, are pitchers more likely to repeat their last pitch after a swinging strike? And we found that that was a resounding yes. Even when we control for count on the previous pitch type and a pitcher's individual whiff rate, we're still seeing that yes, we're going to repeat our pitch more often after gain of whiff. Our second question, we were asking ourselves whether batters are more likely to whiff on these post-whiff repeat pitches. And it was a mixed bag. We see that they do swing and miss more often against these types of pitches, but the relationship is explained away by that selection bias with the pitcher and batter swinging strike rate on the pitch, with that weird four-seam fastball exception where there is still a bit of a relationship. To close, I wanted to talk a little bit about what I think some applications of this are and what I think some future exploration could look like. The most obvious application I've kind of touched on when talking about individual pitchers would be on scouting reports. Say that for the most extreme whiff effect pitchers, I do think this would be pretty useful information for teams to provide hitters with. And in terms of the second question on whether or not batters are whiffing against the post-whiff repeat pitches, I think that some of the Hawkeye, the new data that we're gonna get from Hawkeye in the next couple of years could be interesting. I know in the last panel, they were talking a lot about the biomechanics data that Hawkeye is gonna give. I think that's gonna be the main focus, but there's also gonna be some interesting bat tracking data that comes out of Hawkeye. We might be able to ask ourselves, does it matter how badly a batter misses a pitch? If I am way late on a fastball, or if I just missed a fastball, does that affect how I'm going to perform on the next fastball? I don't know. It'll be very interesting to look into. Finally, I think in a more broad sense, this project kind of is a way of quantifying the feel of a game. And I think there's often, I don't really like when it's framed this way, but the baseball world is framed as all the purists who are all on feel, and then the saber people who are all into the numbers. I think that this is kind of a way of melding that together. And we can look and say like, no, like there, like what happens early in a game is gonna affect what happens later in a game. For example, there are like dozens of questions like this that could be asked. For example, one question I was thinking about is, let's say that I have a pitch, I have my curveball just get lit up for a home run and a double early in the game. Am I going to have the confidence to keep throwing that curveball later in the game, or am I going to shy away from it? That is all that I've got. I'll just say all of my thank you to Baseball Savant and Fangraphs. That's where all my data came from. I cannot believe that those websites are free with the amount of cool stuff on there. I also want to say I presented a very, very early version of this project last October at a sports conference at UConn. That conference does not exist. This project never would have gotten off the ground. So I'm so grateful to the folks who organized that. And I'm also wildly grateful to Sabre for hosting me. And I could not be any more thrilled to have been here today. That is all I've got. And now I will go ahead and dive into the Q&A. It'll take me just a second to figure out how that works. Let's see here. Chris Watkins asks, did you perform a proportion test to verify that there was statistically significant differences? Yes, there is. And the reason I didn't report that was just because of how absolutely massive that the sample sizes were. That test is going to come back as statistically significant. Even if there isn't really much of it. But yes, there were in the background, yes, there are those significance tests being performed. Let's see here. Live, why did you not divide the batters by chase rates? One issue that I was running into with the method that I use is, since I was dividing the pitches into so many different categories with each of those like control group combinations. Every time that I did that, I'm losing sample size. And so I didn't want to introduce, I guess, yet another combination. And then I'd be stuck with say like 20 or 30 pitches in each group that I was analyzing. Let's see here. John Foley asks, was the 51.7% repeat after a whiff representative for each pitch type, or are certain pitches more likely to be repeated than others? That is something I didn't talk about here just mostly because of time. That is something that I looked at before. And I'm trying to recall. I believe that I remember that there was something interesting, or I believe it was two-seam fastballs and cutters did not show as much, or like the last pitch was a two-seam or a cutter. The relationship was not as extreme there. And I want to say, I don't want to misspeak, but I think it was more for the off-speed pitches, or it's a little bit stronger, but the relationship was still there regardless of pitch. It was just a little bit more extreme depending on pitch type. Let's see. This is a super interesting question from Mark. Did you consider looking at a pitcher's MLB experience years and whether they repeat the pitch more often or less? Another thought, I'm not sure can you do it, depending on who is calling the pitch, the pitcher or catcher. Those are both questions that I was like very, very curious about. And it's not something that I looked at. In regards to the first question, that's kind of getting at, like, I was really wondering, like, I wonder if these like crafty pitchers who have been around a lot, like say a Zach Greinke, if maybe they do something bizarre, special compared to like some of the younger guns. I'm not sure. And in regards to the question about, does it depend on who is calling the pitch, the pitcher or the catcher? That I think is a really interesting question as well. To look at, let's say like who was catching the pitch, and maybe there are certain catchers who have more of a tendency to say like, ooh, I just got a swing and miss here, I'm going to call that fastball again. So yeah, I think that'd be a super, super interesting to look at. I did not personally look at. Let's see here. Yeah. And then a similar question here from Shay Bonner. I think that could be interesting as well. The question is, did you break this data down by team? I see that three of the top pitchers on your list were effect with Cincinnati Reds. I wonder if that has something to do with the team's pitching philosophy. That I think would also be a really interesting follow-up, kind of going along with the catcher question, is who is responsible for who is responsible for the pitch calling, and who is responsible for seeing this going on? Scroll down a little bit. Let's see here. That's an interesting question. Do you think that pitchers repeat not the pitches, but also the zone after the pitcher got the whiff? That's also, I think that'd be it. Again, like there are so many little questions like this that I could spawn off from this. Like, yeah, I'd be really curious. I feel like I saw, like, gosh, a year or two ago, an interesting Twitter thread from Tom Tango, and he actually kind of looked at whether, repeat, like, the most common, I guess, repeated location pattern. So, yeah, I think that would be interesting as well to see, like, ooh, like, maybe if I'm going up and in, maybe I find I really like going up and in with this pitch, and I'm going to keep going there. Let's see here. A question from Jeremy Losak. You include control for the pitcher, batter, overall swing and strike rate. I think if you did it by pitch, ignore this question, given there's sizable heterogeneity in swing and strike rates across pitches. Are you concerned that you aren't effectively controlling for the selection bias? Yes, I'm really, really glad that you asked this question, because that's something that I think I struggled to make clear during the presentation, is that, yeah, I actually did within each of those models, that was controlling for the pitcher and batter's whiff rate on whatever specific pitch that we're looking at. That, I think, is going to be all the time that I've got since it is 7:29. But thank you again so much for having me. And I am very, very excited for the next presentation.